Sir Alexander Glanry won.
Can we start with the outbreak of the Second World War, and can you tell me what duties you had, what capacity you were in then?
Certainly. I should perhaps explain that from 1931 to 1936, I was involved in running three expeditions to the Arctic, to Spitsbergen and to North Eastland, the last of which was 1935-36, 14 months expedition, financed by Royal Society, Royal Geographical Society, the most important feature of which was research on the ionosphere, continuing the work which had been initiated by Watson, Watt and Appleton 2 years before in North Norway. It is quite significant to certain later operations in 1941 and 42, which we'll be coming back to. But answering your question, I had already been commissioned in the RNBR because of this Arctic work. So I was mobilized, I think, about April 1939, and went to the Mediterranean, HMS Arethusa, I think in September 1939, and we were engaged in contraband control, mostly in the Aegean, from then until the end of 1939. Arethusa was in 3rd Cruiser Squadron, Captain Quinton Graham, and Admiral Tovey was Rear Admiral commanding 3rd Cruiser Squadron. Interesting period, bringing us up all through the Greek islands, Turkish coast, and bringing back as boarding parties mostly Italian and Greek ships for examination in Malta.
What type of things did you discover?
Very little. It was mostly legitimate trade. I don't think any of the vessels intercepted, as far as I know, carried anything particularly significant. But it was a working up period. Alexander Hood, who was also a contemporary, we tried to develop a rather more specific intelligence sort of network, very simple, very basic, of the type of tonnage which was operating. Then Arethusa was returned to UK January 1940, and almost immediately DNI appointed me as Assistant Naval Attaché in Belgrade. Now, this really introduced, shall we say, Chapter 2 of naval life. Belgrade Embassy was concerned primarily with trying to sustain Yugoslav independence and Yugoslav refusal to enter association with the Axis powers. But there was a very important secondary objective, a long-term one, of the River Danube itself, and particularly its significance to German economy, both in terms of the grain brought up river from Romania, the grain and oil, rather, brought up river from Romania. So the fledgling D department, later become SOE, were active in trying to find ways and means of blocking the Danube. the ways and means adopted or considered were would have made a pretty good red nose comedy film today. One was they purchased a bit of land above the Iron Gates in the Kazan Gorge, where there was a suitable cave, and the idea was to fill this with high explosives and bring down the whole of the 2,000 foot high, I suppose, precipice above the Iron Gates. The chance of doing that, I should think, were about zero on a very hopeful basis. We were, and SOE at that time was under the in Yugoslavia, under the command of one Junius Hanner. He was an old-term Belgrade resident, was expelled by the Yugoslavs, and his successor was Bill Bailey, who later, remember, was with Mihailovic, a senior British liaison officer. We were a very amateur bunch. I think that's the first observation I must make. Immensely keen. What was gratifying, perhaps, was that the Germans, I suspect, at that time were just about as amateur as we were. It was a sort of ring of roses, you know. But people learned fairly quickly, and work became political as well as naval and military. Clearly, one of our objectives was to work up association with one or other political party, and in fact it was the Serbian Agrarian Party with whom we began to establish close relations. We were able to bring in some 500 Tommy guns, for example, for distribution to them. And
how did you get them in?
Smuggled with their help across the Greek frontier from Salonika. You had a situation where the public opinion in Serbia, 100% pro-ally, violently pro-ally and anti-German. So the Germans and the Italians both were at very considerable disadvantage, despite what I've said about the amateurishness of methods at that time.
Why was it so violently pro-ally and anti-German?
Oh, historically, from World War I of Germany as the, you might say, natural enemy of the Serbs, and also reinforced by, interesting this, the memory of two nursing missions which Britain sent to Yugoslavia, to Serbia rather, in 1917. The Scottish woman's mission under Dr. Ingalls and Dr. MacPhail, splendid women, and an English unit under Lady Paget. And going through NATO, I'm now jumping 3 or 4 years ahead, in the middle of the resistance war, going from village to village, the memories of these women doctors, even in the depth of gloom of resistance, would always be brought up in conversation of great gratitude to these women whose individual names even, and that was for 30 years later, was still remembered with great gratitude. I mention that as an example of the warmth and the of the Serbian people at that time. Now, if I could just bring that together perhaps a little bit more carefully, we had a very good military attaché, Colonel Clark, a rather quiet Scotsman whom it's easy to underestimate, who had built the closest of relationships with the Yugoslav General Staff, particularly their Director of Military Intelligence, Jaco Popovic. And an enterprising air attaché with, as his assistant, a little bit later, Tom Mapplebeck, who you have interviewed, I know, who had done exactly the same with the Yugoslav Air Force. The naval attaché was Max Despard, who had commanded a gunboat in the Danube at the end of World War I. A very knowledgeable chap indeed, but sadly had been badly wounded by a delayed action backfire from 4-inch gun. He lost half a hip, suffered greatly from great pain from this wound. A chap who never would give up. But inevitably it meant that as his assistant naval attaché, Despard's health meant really more and more responsibility fell on my shoulders. And amongst that was making the first contact with Colonel Clark with Colonel Draža Mihajlović, who already had been appointed at that time to be in charge of post-occupation resistance if the Germans attacked. At the same time, we were continuing operations on the Danube, preemptive ones, and I must give credit there to work Ministry of Economic Warfare instigated through Harris Berland, an accountant working in Belgrade. We purchased one of the smaller Danube fleets called the Simon Schultz fleet of some 10, 12 tugs and probably 30, 40 barges. And that had quite a bit of preemptive importance on Danube traffic. I don't want to exaggerate it, but this was an indication of an increasing professionalism coming in as opposed to the earlier amateurism of the operations there. So if I could summarize perhaps by end of 1940, close links with the Serbian Agrarian Party, Junon Emre was with us, and he had established some links with the young communists in Belgrade University, who, by the way, were very much the training area of a number of the future younger partisan commanders. We had in Zagreb more difficult. Stephen Clissold was one of the assistant consuls in Zagreb, and one was quite aware by then of the extremist Croat element, which later was to become Ustaki, and the intense hostility to the Allies and deep, deep support for Germany and particularly Italy. In the south of the country, we were quite active in around Skopje in Macedonia, and once again, of course, aware of the tensions between Bulgar, Albanian and Serb members of that community. Montenegro and the coast didn't really need much attention because they were so intensely, again, anti-German. In SOE was beginning to form up for a period of about 4 months. To my great surprise, I found myself apparently in charge of it. No one told me, but Mark Wheeler has presented me with the monthly budget sheets, which apparently were drawn up by me, carry my signature, and the record of signals. I would have liked to have known that I was in charge, but apparently I was, until SOE sent out Colonel Masterson, who had been for many years resident in Romania. The family owned the Phoenix Oil Company in Romania. Tom had a good war in World War I and brought discipline to the SOE structure in the country. And really, from that moment, from the moment of his arrival, SOE within Yugoslavia, I think had a for the very short period of time within which it had been in existence, really was quite effective, remarkably effective, considering all that. Masterson did a great job. Marco Hudson was already in it. Bill Bailey, of course, but he was allowed to return for a short period. And both Julian Damery and he, by the end of the year, had disappeared. Then, of course, it became evident from early 1941 that German pressure was intensifying on the Yugoslav government that they should become associated more loosely or more closely with the Tripartite Pact. In retrospect, Prince Paul carried out most of the negotiations himself, but bearing in mind the very fragmented country with Croat opposition that I mentioned before behind him, my guess today would be that Prince Paul handled these negotiations a great deal more skillfully than either we believed at the time or that history has given him credit for. I think if he didn't prevent acceptance of the terms, I think he at least delayed that acceptance by quite a number of weeks. I think it could easily have been, say, early February rather than middle March. And I think there's scope there for quite a bit of historical rethinking. But in any case, eventually, on the 20th or 22nd of March, he agreed to what were modified German terms. There is some suggestion that these terms did not include transit rights for Axis forces against across Yugoslavia. I do not know for certain whether that is so or not, but in any event, the Serbian part of the population, and I think I say this deliberately, was not going to accept any combination with the Axis. The group of young officers, led mainly by General Mirkovic of the Yugoslav Air Force, Colonel Knežević, and Major two Knežević brothers carried out the coup d'etat on the morning of the 27th of March and substituted or put King Peter, young King Peter, onto his throne and arrested Prince Paul.
How much were you involved with the preparations for the coup d'etat?
Well, it's a very, very interesting subject, that. Wing Commander MacDonald was a close friend of Mirkovic. I think MacDonald was probably privy to what was going on, as probably was Mapplebeck too. I think each of them may have played an encouraging role, as did Clark. But I believe this was a Yugoslav occasion, which would have happened in any event, with or without British participation. And it certainly, throughout the whole of Serbia, it was, quite frankly, a nation in arms from that moment. My wife and I went we spent the whole day going round Belgrade, talking to as many people as we could. And if I could just instance it by one old peasant woman, probably then late 50s, and we asked her what she felt about it. And her answer was this. She said, I lost my husband in World War I. He was killed. And I lost most of my brothers. I've got three sons, and I expect to lose them now. But Yugoslavia has shown itself its right to be a nation. And I can't explain public reaction better than that old lady's words. Then, of course, acceleration of events. There was no doubt Germany was going to attack, and whether suitably concealed Bletchley decrypts or not, it was pretty clear that the morning of the 5th of April was first chosen, which was later postponed by the Germans to the morning of the 6th of April. And the air attack started about 6 in the morning. It continued all day. Belgrade had been declared an open city. Fighter defense, they were shot out of the skies, or shot up on the ground, rather, both. It was a very heavy bombing by any future standards. We had to spend part of the day trying to move. We had a lot of packing suitcases with plastic explosives, you know, in safe houses in Belgrade. So we tried to get as many of these out and into the country during that day. Succeeded. We got most of them away to safer places, including the swimming pool of the house which the later German commandant for Belgrade occupied, dived into his pool and hit his head, I'm glad to say, on these suitcases. And I think we left the city about 10 o'clock that night, following the general staff, eventually, as you know, the sequence of that war, the Yugoslav defences were extended for political reasons very far north. Whether more intensive defence in the hill country of Serbia would have made very much difference, I think it's pure conjecture. But Croat mutiny took place within the first Croat mutiny in mixed regiments. We encountered, I think, on the 9th, that's the third day, we were driving through Mostar, arrived outside Mostar early in the morning, stopped two senior Serbian officers, both major colonels, outside the barracks. And again, if I could just quote them, I think we said, what news? And one turned to the other and said, our very good friends, the Croats. These two, I know, were murdered within very few minutes of our departing. We were stopped. The Ustaki already, the mutinying troops had already put onto their uniforms yellow Ustaki flashes. And the speed of that's quite interesting in showing how well prepared this was. Going up, for example, because we turned left to get out of this place. We were damn lucky, extraordinarily lucky to get through. And we must have passed 200, 300 Croat soldiers, mutinying soldiers, going up to hold the heights above Mostar. Everyone had his flash already. Now that would have been 7:15. So preparation was very thorough. We had a funny incident there, because there was the head of the Serbian peasant party, Tvanjanin, his son, Hugh Seaton Watson, my wife, myself, and we had a Tommy gun and a rug at each side of the car. And we were stopped, of course, at the first roadblock, because roadblocks were up already. And it was a major, wearing his flash, opened the door. Now, he must have recognized Tupanin. He couldn't have failed to. But he just looked at us and said, "Have a good journey," and waved us on. And no question, he saved our lives.
How can you explain it?
I can't. Someone torn between two views. But we were jolly lucky. So, up to the hill, by that time, the war, I mean, that part, the defense was lost, obviously. And the embassy party, and about altogether dealing with quite a number of old nannies, nurses, governesses, press. We British, I suppose, about 60 to 70, and we had with us a number of Poles and Hungarians whose necks were very much at risk. We all got down to Kotor, and there was some hope that a Mediterranean fleet were going to try and send a destroyer through to take us off. I personally had no hope of that at all, that with Otranto, it was much too dangerous, and we were losing ships too heavily at that time. There was talk of a submarine, and indeed a submarine did come in, I'll tell you later. But we got a Sunderland flying boat, commanded by, or flown by, Group Captain Francis, did fly in from Athens, landed Kotor Bay, and I'm glad to say we got every one of the Poles, the Hungarians, various others, everyone whose neck was in danger, onto that Sunderland. Francis did, I think he'd something like 50 people and jammed in, I mean solid. He did the most remarkable, because I flew flying boats later, remarkable takeoff. I mean, this thing lumbered in the water for about 3 miles, you know, and sort of teetered into the air. And I suppose she was sort of 100, 200 feet. She was carrying very little petrol, fortunately, because he prepared for that. So we got them away. And then the following day, a bit of panic, because the Germans, we thought, were coming down the coast, and the Albanians, I'm glad to say, the Italians, I'm glad to say, arrived first. And that is really end of Yugoslav's story.
Whilst you were in Belgrade, did you have any contact with the royal family?
Personally, none. No. No.
What do you think of the role that the regent played in the crisis of late March, early April?
Well, as I've said before, I think the regent played a more clever, helpful part than he's been given credit for. I have not studied papers on this myself at first hand, but I'm taking the length of time of negotiation.